This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We spend the next hour talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with local organizers and participants in Cincinnati's MLK Day celebrations, which are mostly virtual this year. We start with a look at the city's historic connections to the civil rights movement and the keynote speaker at today's event. We're joined now via Zoom by Reverend Nelson Pierce Jr. He's senior pastor at Beloved Community Church and the Faith and Race Program Director at the Center for Faith and Justice at Xavier University. Reverend Pierce, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Michael.
It's our pleasure to have you. We're also joined by Rabbi Gary Zola. He's the executive director of the Jacob Rader Marcus Center of the American Jewish Archives, Hebrew Union College Institute of Religion. He's also past president of the MLK Coalition. Rabbi Zola, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be back with you.
Appreciate that. Reverend Pierce, let's start with you. You're delivering the keynote address at the MLK Day event here in Cincinnati. It's underway right now in Cincinnati, and I understand that the theme of this event this year is we will never be satisfied until justice rolls down like water. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the work for justice across the nation, and particularly here in Cincinnati, is an ongoing work. And as important as it is to pause for a moment on this holiday to remember the life and work of Dr. King and the impact that he as an individual and the movements that he was involved in has had on our nation, we also must use this as a time to honor the present civil rights struggles that that we are currently facing, and remember that in much the same way that Dr. King was not celebrated or lionized when he was alive, that the current people who are fighting for social justice often do not meet with large-scale societal approval. And so as we gather and remember Dr. King's legacy, we also ought to lift up those who are fighting on the front lines for civil rights and social justice in our current day and time.
Reverend Pierce, I understand during your keynote, you're going to focus on pieces of our city's history here in Cincinnati and talk about why this particular city is in a unique position in moving forward in history and to encourage others who are passionate about justice not to give up. What type of message can we expect from you in that respect?
Yes, it's so I want to lift up moments in Cincinnati's history, particularly referencing what happened in 2000 and 2001, as the Cincinnati Black United Front and other organizations came together to take a stand against the extrajudicial police killings of unarmed Black men in Cincinnati, and engaged in a fight that created the avenue for so much change. And to say that as we gather and remember Dr. King, that we ought to remember this part of our history. I actually will be calling on the National Underground Railroad History Museum to create an exhibit that honors honors the Cincinnati Black United Front so that our story can be honored here in our own city. And also for us to lean into this history, to take advantage of it, to create an opportunity for us to be on the front lines of thinking about what does social justice call us to as a city moving forward. We're seeing Minneapolis and Baltimore and St. Louis and Dallas and so many cities that are dealing with these issues in a public way. And we've had 20 years of dealing with it. And so we can show people what's possible if we take seriously this history.
Rabbi Zola, you've been involved with the MLK Coalition for a long time, and you're very familiar with this city's history, with racial challenges, but also with some of the more recognizable figures from the country's civil rights movement. Tell us a little bit about the city's role in that history and some of the figures who factor heavily in it.
Well, you are right, and I want to identify myself and my thinking with what Reverend Pierce just said, because I agree with him. I think that our city is uniquely positioned to take a lead in what I refer to as the most vexing and throbbing problem that society faces today, which is racism and white supremacy. And the fact is that Cincinnati has had a bundle of problems. We can trace these problems historically going back to the city's very beginnings. And some of the city's stories really are not that pretty. But there has been there have been an array of heroes and courageous profiles. I'm thinking, for example, of a man I had the privilege of meeting personally, and may he live to be 120, Reverend Otis Moss, who was here in the early 60s and was a pastor here in Cincinnati. He went to the March on Washington with Dr. King in 1963, and then was so motivated that he came back to Cincinnati and organized a similar march in October. The march in 63 was in August, and 2 months later, he and a number of outstanding clergy figures led a very important a statement about civil rights, about voting rights, and about equality and justice here in our own city. That's in October of 1963. I would be remiss if I didn't mention another figure who's been outstanding here in our community, and that's of course the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, a blessed memory. Now, many people know about Reverend Shuttlesworth from his work in Birmingham, and of course his as a young man right by Dr. King's side. But he then came and spent a good share of his pastorate here in Cincinnati, where he really became a prominent leader. I mean, there's so many figures I could go on and on. Pastor, the Reverend Dr. L.V. Booth, the father of Paul Booth and the grandfather of Reverend Booth, Reverend Paul Booth, here in our community deserves special mention. And I guess I'll end by saying, I'm not sure everybody knows this. I don't even know if Reverend Pierce knows this, but, you know, there's a whole world within, Michael, within the church community of great musicians. And these great musicians often are just within the circle of the Black church, and they're very well known and not necessarily always known outside of the church, but could be very famous within the larger American church community. Well, we had a number of such figures here in this community. One was the name of one is a woman, a blessed memory by the name of Louise Shropshire. Her family still is in Cincinnati. And Louise Shropshire was a great, very much admired musician, organized choirs, gospel singers, and music for the Black churches here in our city and around the country. Well, she wrote a tune that would eventually become the basis of We Shall Overcome. And this I'm not making up. I this has been documented by my good friend Isaiah Gamboa, who lives here in Cincinnati. There's a book on this, and it's even reached a culmination in a court decision acknowledging the contribution of Louise Shropshire from Cincinnati, Ohio, in this really world famous hymn of the civil rights movement. So we have a lot in which to take pride. But we don't want to rest on our laurels. We want to move ahead. And that's why I'm looking forward to hearing Reverend Pierce when he speaks during our virtual program, because this is a man who hasn't just given lip service to this topic. He works day in and day out on this very important problem.
And you are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The MLK Day celebration is taking place for the 46th time here in the Queen City. It is mostly a virtual program this year, filmed at Music Hall. We've got a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab if you'd like to watch the events as they unfold. There was an MLK motorcade that drove this morning that could have been seen live, and there was some limited seating available on Rosa Parks buses provided by Metro. We're joined today by Reverend Nelson Pierce Jr. He's senior pastor at Beloved Community Church and the Faith and Race Program Director at the Center for Faith and Justice at Xavier University. He delivers the keynote address at the MLK Day celebration here in Cincinnati. And we're also joined by Rabbi Gary Zola, Executive Director of the Jacob Rader Marcus Center of the American Jewish Archives at Hebrew Union College Institute of Religion. He's also the past president of the MLK Coalition. Reverend Pierce, we saw the civil unrest that took place throughout last year in response to the police killings of African Americans. And unfortunately, Cincinnati has a history of this as well. And there was unrest here 20 years ago now. What experience do you think the city gained from 2001 that might help them address the current struggles that other cities might not have been prepared for?
So I think that is the most relevant question for Cincinnati in this time. I think one of the things that we need to remember is that the collaborative agreement, which is the document that came out of that struggle, only came into effect because the community sued the city and the police department in a lawsuit that ended up in federal court. That the city's leaders of the time were unwilling to take seriously the complaints of African Americans in the city. And so there must be I think that's a cautionary tale, that progress, being able to make progress on these matters of racial justice, requires us to get into uncomfortable conversations. And if our leadership, if the people who are in leadership in our cities are unwilling to engage in these conversations because they look bad in the press, because they don't want to hear from people who are going to be complaining, or because they think that they can keep their jobs and be elected without the votes of the people who are the most vulnerable, then our cities will continue to be in crisis. But the only way we were able to move forward productively was when all parties sat down at a table and began to negotiate together on how things might improve. The challenge that we are having now is that everybody wants to lionize that agreement in the same way that we lionized Dr. King, which is to lift it up and celebrate it without critically applying the lessons from that time and from that document into our current day. And so it is easy for people in Cincinnati, particularly elected officials, to proclaim the greatness of Cincinnati because we have this awesome document that we put into practice so many years ago, without any critical analysis for how well we are functioning based on that document now, or without creating a process to address the ongoing issues with policing in our day and time. And so while Cincinnati does not have in recent history, in the last 10, 15 years or so, the number of dead African Americans at the hands of police that Columbus or Cleveland or even smaller cities like Beaver Creek, Ohio does, we still disproportionately stop arrest and charge African-Americans in the city. And I was in a conversation with a group of elected officials and faith leaders the other day, and I told them, I do not want to live in a city where we have to tell our kids, be grateful that you're in a city that will only arrest you or stop you or beat you because you're Black, but they won't kill you. That's not what justice looks like. And so we have so much more work to do and are willing to take seriously what has happened in the process that got us there so that we can continue to move the needle of justice forward in Cincinnati could be a great legacy for the rest of the country to take and to embrace right now.
Rabbi Zola, today we honor and remember the legacy and memory of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His message is one that inspired you very early on. And as a Jewish person, you were inspired to become a rabbi because of what was going on in the civil rights movement. Would you share a little bit of that history with us?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Although I've said this so many times, I hope I've arrived at that point in time and in life when I'm in the repetitive stage. But I don't mind saying that when I was about 10 years old in Chicago, growing up in Chicago, that was right in what you might call the period of time when Dr. King was really at the apex of his career, his short and brief, all too short and brief career. And he came to Chicago on many occasions. And we had in Chicago a very active group of Black leaders who worked with Dr. King. And in my community, I attended my Reform synagogue, and I was involved in my synagogue youth program. We had a young reverend by the name of Jesse Jackson come and talk to my youth group in those days and so forth. But what really inspired me, Michael, were the rabbis who were, you know, some of them have gone from time to eternity now, but they were young rabbis at the time, and they were involved with Dr. King and with the Chicago civil rights movement. And when Dr. King spoke at Soldier Field, the Chicago Board of Rabbis was there by his side and spoke and supported this. Well, there's many historical and good reasons why this is an important alliance. But all I'll say, Michael, is that when I saw representatives, teachers, scholars of my religious tradition, a tradition which has its own identity shaped in the transformation from slavery to freedom, I was so inspired by the practical application of the moral teachings of my tradition to America's vexing problems. I really do put the beginnings of what many of my Christian colleagues call their call. I wouldn't use that word myself for me, but if I had to tell you what my call was, it came from that moment. And even though all these years, close to 40 now, I've been in the ivory tower. Of course, Reverend Pierce is also in another ivory tower over at Xavier, but I've been in what sometimes is called the ivory tower of the academy. I have always, always devoted community time to this important issue, the one that Reverend Pierce has been describing for us here in the community, because that is really, to me, what religious life is about and what the life of the spirit has to offer. It is leaving our world just a little better while we have time in this earth to do so.
Reverend Nelson Pierce, Jr., he's senior pastor at Beloved Community Church and Faith and Race Program Director at the Center for Faith and Justice at Xavier University. He's also the keynote speaker at the 46th annual MLK Day event here in Cincinnati. It's mostly a virtual event this year, and we've got details on it at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Also, thanks to our other guest, Rabbi Gary Zola, the executive director of the Jacob Rader Marcus Center of the American Jewish Archives at Hebrew Union College Institute of Religion. He's also past president of the MLK Coalition. Rabbi Zola, Reverend Pierce, thanks to both of you for spending part of your day with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue our hour looking at the legacy of Martin Luther King and the local celebration in his honor. Now, we turn to the role music has played and is playing. Joining us now are Steve Malloy, the former director of the MLK Chorale. Steve, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Lois Chagog, the current director of the MLK Chorale. Lois, thank you for being with us.
Good morning and thank you.
Lois, why is music important when we celebrate Martin Luther King's legacy?
Wow. I just don't think it can be divided from the whole concept of the freedom movement starting in the late 50s. Music has always been an integral part of the freedom movement, and it just cannot be separated. The two can't be separated.
Steve, I'll ask you the same question. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, songs of peace and protest are those types of vehicles that help put a human face to, you know, the whole civil rights, Black Lives Matter movement. And it kind of helps people to identify with their struggle and their pain through joy, through song. And really, I don't think of any civil unrest movement that doesn't have some sort of musical repertoire that helps to propel them, that helps to get them motivated to do the things that they need to do in order to make change.
Both of you are heavily involved in music around the region, both in religious institutions. Steve, you're part of St. John UCC in Bellevue, and Lois, you're part of St. Peter's UCC in Cincinnati. Steve, you're the director of the Cincinnati Men's Chorus. Lois, you perform with Muse Cincinnati. You're a retired music teacher from Cincinnati Public Schools. What exactly should we be looking for in the performance on Martin Luther King Jr. Day? Because this year's celebration will follow a year that has been full of tumult as it relates to racial justice. Is there anything different about this year's performance when we take that in mind, Lois?
This year's performance has been a major production in trying to get everyone on tape and ready to Zoom, if you will. There will be young people performing both instrumental and spoken word, all of that. The staff of the coalition has been very busy trying to put all of that together. This year's performance, from the choral point of view, I will be the soloist. And Stephen, I don't know if his is solo. Yours is a composition that you've done, right?
Yes, and it's a virtual video, actually.
Okay, so I will be, and Stephen was able to accompany me on Wade in the Water.
Yes.
And a compilation of Wade in the Water and Ella's Song, which were pivotal songs for my history. But for sure, Wade in the Water has always been one, it's a spiritual, and two, it has been part of the freedom movement from the beginning. Ella's Song, which was written as a commemorative to Ella Baker and her feeling of we who believe in freedom cannot rest. And I feel that that is a integral note that we are still. She wrote this piece in 1981, and here we are again, still encouraging each other that we who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Well, we know that the pandemic has made the bulk of these performances to be virtual. But yeah, the good part of that is that we've got a little bit of clips from the performances that we're going to play for our listeners now. And here's a little bit of that Ella's song and Wade in the Water.
See that band all dressed in red. God's going to trouble the water. It must be the children that Moses led. God's going to trouble the water.
That's the voice of Lois Chagog. We're also joined by Steve Malloy. Lois is the current director of the MLK Chorale. Steve Malloy, a previous director. Steve, you've got a story about one of the songs that are performed. It's called Heavy. And I understand that this particular composition, which you created the music for, originated with a poem by a man out of Minneapolis who was moved to write something after the murder of George Floyd. But you found that the words that were submitted to you were not the right message. And so you found someone else to do the story, the words. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
I'm just going to kind of take it back a little bit. It's not so much the words. What happened was I had a talk with a director of a chorus who is also a composer in his own right. But who is also a white American. He had commissioned this woman by the name of Mackenzie Coleman to write a poem, just commemorating the death of George Floyd and all of those before him and the struggles that we've been going through in this current period with Black Lives Matter and civil rights and also COVID. And he asked me, do you think it'll be all right that I set the music?
Oh, I had it a little bit backwards. So he wanted to write the music to a poem. And
yes.
Okay, I got you. All right, I'm following.
Yeah, that's okay. And at the time I thought, he's a more than capable composer. He should be able to do this. And then I told him, go ahead, do it. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, this is another instance a white person who is trying to set the tone for African-American feelings, which has happened for years and decades, with white people arranging spirituals. I'm not saying that that's wrong, per se, but it would really be nice to actually hear those feelings stated from an authentic voice. So I wrote him back and saying, especially during this time, when we really should be elevating our brothers and sisters and others of color, maybe this isn't the time for you to set the music. And he said, okay, fine, you're going to set it, which I wasn't planning for, but it turned out to be this wonderful journey for me to kind of go through my feelings with these words and how I'm dealing with the current crises at hand.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Heavy. Steve, I'm hearing a lot of voices there. Can you talk a little bit about how you assembled all those groups?
Yes. So when I was commissioned to write this piece, more than 14 choruses signed on to be a part of the commission. And they also decided that they wanted to do a virtual video of the piece. So right now in that snippet, you're hearing over 300 singers from all over the United States. Everyone from high school to college age to, you know, sages and seniors. So it was really remarkable how they put this all together.
Another song that is part of the program during the Martin Luther King celebration, the 46th annual MLK Day in Cincinnati, is Lift Every Voice and Sing. Lois, what can you tell us about this piece?
Well, it is considered the Black National Anthem, and it was written by the Johnson Brothers. I can't remember the date right now, but I've sung it all my life. Can you remember?
I know Stephen? It's right around the turn of the 20th century. And it was written actually as a commemoration to remember President Abraham Lincoln's birthday.
Okay. But it was written for their high school because the
yes.
brothers, right. It was like either a graduation piece or something like that at the time. Yeah. But it has become a commemorative signature piece in history. And the two verses that we chose to sing are most popular from the beginning. And then I think we decided to sing the third verse, which is sometimes the struggle is great. Before, those are not the exact words, but stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, are all those things that the struggle goes on, unfortunately, it just happens. You have to continue to work on people's attitudes. And we all come from different walks of life coming together to try to make this a peaceful place to live and exist.
Let's listen to a little bit of Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Lift every voice and sing.
That was a little bit of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Lois Chagog and Steve Malloy, I'm so glad you all could take some time with us to record this in advance so that we could air it at the same time that this event is taking place downtown. And for those of us who are unable to be at the downtown celebration or maybe didn't know, they could log on online and watch it. We've got a link for that information at WVXU.org. Steve and Lois, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The significance of the election of a Black clergyman in the special Georgia U.S. Senate runoff earlier this month traces directly to Dr. King. Here, we talk about that and how to deepen the teaching of MLK's legacy and how local students observe the day. Joining us now is Dr. David Childs, Associate Professor of Social Studies Education and History at Northern Kentucky University. David, welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me.
On this Martin Luther King Day, we note a very historic connection to Dr. King in the way of the recent Georgia runoff Senate elections. And that's because Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock, who is a Democrat, a Black man, and a pastor, one of those special elections and will now be serving in the United States Senate. Talk a little bit about the significance of that as it relates to the legacy of Dr. King.
Well, the historic win of Reverend Dr. Raphael Gamil Warnock in the 2021 Georgia Senate race brings to mind the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. In 2005, Warnock became senior pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, Martin Luther King Jr.'s former congregation. He's the fifth and youngest person to serve as Ebenezer's senior pastor since its founding. Warnock's election is timely in light of all of the recent racial turmoil and the history of racial discrimination in Georgia. And so this is a historic year to even be having these conversations, you know, in light of all the racial tension and the polarization that's currently in our country now. It's very timely to be trying to talk about unity, and then also at the same time calling out injustice, just as Dr. King did. So the times that he was arrested and attacked, and many of the same things people are saying about social justice today, people said against Dr. King. And so that same spirit is here today. And then furthermore, the prophetic tradition of the Black minister is so important to talk about through the role of the Black church. Myself, I'm a member of the Black church. I'm actually an ordained clergy. And I stand in that same tradition to speak truth to power. And that's what I really appreciate. I'm excited about Dr. Warnock's position. And he's even said he's not going to step down from his congregation. So I think that's an important question to bring up.
So why is the role of the clergy so important in the Black community?
Well, historically, the first institution that was owned by African Americans in the United States was the church. If you go back to 1816 with the founding of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, it was formed not because Black folks wanted to start their own thing. In fact, most Black organizations, like historically Black colleges, Black churches, they were birthed out of racism. So what happened with Richard Allen, the founder of the first Black-owned church, the AME Church in 1816, they were praying in the white section of the church, and they were physically dragged from their knees from that white section of the church. They had the designated church section for Black people back then, reminiscent of Jim Crowism. And they pulled them off their knees and said, "You're praying in the wrong section." And all of the Black folks were kind of like, "Well, this is it. We just need to start our own church so that we won't have to deal with this." And so the Black church became the centerpiece for a lot of the political discussions, empowerment, education, particularly in the South, when education was largely illegal in many parts of the South for Blacks to obtain. In antebellum times, the church educated many of the many African-American people. And so today, that Black clergy is the intellectual voice, the prophetic public intellectual that has been longstanding in the Black community. And that tradition is still here today. And I think it may have got lost in the American consciousness to a certain extent, but now we see the rise of it and the importance of it. So that's why Reverend Dr. Warnock's position is so important to me and many other people like myself and to America in general.
On this Martin Luther King Day, we're talking with Dr. David Childs, Associate Professor of Social Studies, Education, and History at Northern Kentucky University. We tend to learn about Martin Luther King in school, but the focus at that early age in our lives is on some of his more famous speeches, particularly the one in 1963 in Washington, D.C., but you've noted before that Dr. King focused on democratic principles such as justice, freedom, equality, fairness, and creating what he called the, quote, beloved community. A lot of those themes are still prevalent, particularly in the marches and protests we saw all last summer in this country in response to the killing of African Americans at the hands of police. How should educators adjust their approach to teaching Martin Luther King to go beyond those famous speeches like "I Have a Dream"?
That's a great question. The important thing to understand, I'll use the work of a scholar, James Banks, to really answer this question. James Banks is the foremost authority in multicultural education. And Dr. James Banks talks about the different levels of multicultural education. The first level, he said, is the contributions level, contributions model, where basically you just mention it as an afterthought. Dr. King's birthday comes up in a kindergarten or first grade classroom. They make color pictures of Dr. King. They might say he did a good thing. And that's all they talk about throughout the whole semester. And the other end of the spectrum, he talks about four levels. The third level will be the transformation model. And that's where you look, you delve deeper and integrate more meaningfully multicultural curriculum, African-American history, African-American culture, Black studies into the curriculum throughout the whole year, throughout the whole semester. And then the fourth level is social action. And so really to go deeper, you would look at our perspective than somebody else's perspective and integrate that in the curriculum. And the social action piece would be perhaps letter writing, having students practice writing their congressman or woman about issues that they see. So make it more meaningful.
Dr. Childs, we have some sound from some students sharing their reflections, their thoughts on MLK Day. And I'm going to play some for you and have your response. And we'll start with a student named Joyce.
Hello, my name is Joyce Mahura Kay. I'm 15 years old and I'm a student at Aiken High School. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is important to me because I'm a Black woman, meaning that I'm a threat to some people and that my life is at risk. Without Dr. Martin Luther King, this country would not have changed much about racism. Even though racism is still here, it isn't as bad as before. And so thanks to him for his knowledge, wisdom, advice, and leadership in peaceful protest that we learned from him in order to build a better community. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is especially important to me this year because we had it tough with the Black Lives Matter protests going on, election aggression, and COVID-19 concerns. Combine this problem with a clear memory of the days when Black people were mistreated all the way until today. We have still challenges to overcome. Even though there are some changes made, it still doesn't change the fact that Black people aren't treated as good as white people. White privilege exists because justice for all just isn't specific enough. Martin Luther King Jr. brought hope to the Black community through his work and words. Growing up in Rwanda today, living in this country and experiencing the events of the past year, my understanding of his legacy has changed. I try to live the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. by not letting his sacrifice go to waste, by seeing the past as a lesson to change the future so that the present and future generations won't have it as hard as our ancestors did. I think young people see this day differently from older people because young people believe there's more to it in the future. We're the ones capable of changing the struggles we face and be the hope of the future. Whereas older people think that they're not able to make a big difference, but I believe no one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy to make the change. Our community has transformed into a beloved community because they're willing to give it their all. They're not afraid of rising up together and fighting. They are using Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s teachings.
So we thank Joyce for sharing her thoughts with us. Dr. Childs, it seems the young people have a pretty good understanding of the stakes and what's possible.
Absolutely. What a lot of people do not realize is that much of the civil rights movement of the 60s and of the 50s even was motivated and occupied by young people, by the youth. They even had youth as young as elementary and high school. The student nonviolent movement was largely pushed forward by high school and college students. And so it wasn't all middle-aged and older people involved in the movement, but it was youth. And that says a lot in terms of the legacy of Dr. King for today. Youth do have a voice. That's why I really appreciated hearing what the young lady said in terms of her being an African-American woman and how his legacy inspired her to move forward. Because the dream does not stop. It did not die with Dr. King in 1968 when he was assassinated. But he would tell us today to keep the dream alive and keep it going. And so what's the dream for this next generation? It's addressing DACA. It's addressing discrimination against immigrants. It's addressing the violence that we saw at the Capitol last week. It's addressing systemic racism, redlining and redistricting and voter suppression. Young people can get involved. A lot of times young people are overlooked, but every movement, every major movement, protest movement, was really, it had a lot of young people involved. And that's the message I would put out. I would encourage these young folks to be empowered. And a lot of the things that Dr. King did gets missed. You mentioned earlier, Michael, about the I Have a Dream speech. Even that speech, people don't really get into the details of it and know what Dr. King talked about. Or the Birmingham letter was so intense. It was more than just colorblindness. A lot of people read colorblindness from Dr. King's speech. But he was talking about equity and social justice, not just for races, but with a social class, the Poor People's Campaign. So there was so much that gets missed. And I would like to see these youth just delve further, because much of what he talked about has not been realized yet.
We'll close this conversation with some more reaction from young students. Let's hear from Mohammed and Lily.
My name is Mohammed Kamara. I'm a 12th grade student at Aiken High School. I'm from Mali. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is important to me because of the hard work he did to end racial segregation and racial inequality in the United States. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is especially important to me this year, because it is really sad to see there is still racial inequality in America. Moreover, people continue to lose their lives because of their race. I learned about him when I was 9 years old, growing up in Bamako, Mali. Today, living in this country and experiencing the event of the past year, my understanding of his legacy has changed. I'm witnessing people acting against all the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His fight for racial equality and justice is what led to his assassination. I try to leave the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. by going to school and learning more about him. By learning about his fight for equality, this enables me to be a proficient peacemaker and ambassador for others, which lets his legacy live on.
Hello, my name is Lily, and I'm an 11th year student at the Cincinnati School for Creative and Performing Arts. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is important to me because it's a celebration and remembrance of a man who dreamed of love, racial equality, diversity, embracing of cultures, and peace. Martin Luther King Jr. raised America, dreamed of love and light when he said beautiful words such as, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that."
And we thank Mohammed and Lily for sharing that time with us. And we also thank Dr. David Childs for sharing some time with us today as well. He's an associate professor of social studies and education and history at Northern Kentucky University. Dr. Childs, I hope we can talk again soon.
Yes, thanks for having me, Michael. Thank you so much.
And we thank our Cincinnati Public Radio colleague, Julie Copens, for gathering that sound from those students for us. You can learn more about the program she oversees at democracyandme.org. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.